and somehow lead it out again. A land of mystery and terror and cruelty, and the loveliest women in all Africa. A smiling golden nymph in her little leather tunic, teasing me as she sat by a woodland stream plaiting her braids. A gaudy barbarian queen lounging on cushions, surrounded by her tame lions. A tawny young beauty, remarking to my captors, "If we feed him into the fire, little by little, he will speak." Aye, it's an interesting country, Abyssinia. If you've read my previous memoirs, you'll know me better than Speedycut did, and won't share his misgivings about trusting me with a cool $500,000 in silver. Old Flash may be a model of the best vices, lechery, treachery, poltroonery, deceit, and dereliction of duty, all present and correct, as you know, and they're not the half of it. But larceny ain't his style at all. Oh, stern necessity may have led to my lifting this and that on occasion, but nothing on the grand scale. Why, you may remember I once had the chance to make away with a great Koh-i-Noor diamond, but wasn't tempted for an instant. If there's one thing your true-bred coward values, it's peace of mind. And you can't have that if you're a hunted outlaw forever far from home. Also, pocketing a diamond's one thing, but stacks of strong boxes weighing God knows what and guarded by 5 stout lads are a very different palaver. Speed had spoken lightly of a quick trip to Alexandria, but with that pack of dilatory dagos tacking to and fro and putting about between the heel of Italy and Crete, we must have covered all of 2,000 miles, and half the time allotted me to reach Napier had gone before we sighted Egypt. It's a sand-blown dunghill at any time, but I was damn glad to see it after that dead bore of a voyage, and no dreary haul across the desert in prospect either. The camel journey was a penance I'd endured in the past, but now it was rails all the way from Alex to Suez, by way of Cairo, and what had once taken days of arse-burning discomfort was now a journey of 8 hours, thanks to our engineers who'd won the concession in the teeth of frantic French opposition. They were hellish jealous of their great canal, which was then within a year of completion, with gangs of thousands of the unfortunate fellaheen being mercilessly flogged on the last lap, for it was built with slave labour in all but name. We didn't linger in Alexandria. Egypt's the last place you want to carry a cargo of valuables, so I made a quick sortie to the Hotel de l'Europe for a bath and a civilized breakfast, while the marine sergeant drummed up the local donkey drivers to carry the boxes to the station. And then we were rattling away, 4 hours to Cairo, another 4 on the express to Suez, and before bedtime I'd presented myself to the port captain and was dining in the Navy mess. Abyssinia was on every lip, and when it was understood that the celebrated Flashy was bringing Napier his war chest, it was heave and ho with a vengeance. A steam sloop commanded by a cheerful infant named Ballantyne, with a sun-peeled nose and a shock of fair hair bleached almost white by the sun, was placed at my disposal. His tars hoisted the strong boxes aboard and stowed them below. The jollies were crammed into the tiny forecastle, and as the sun came up next morning, we were thrashing down the Gulf of Suez to the Red Sea proper, having been in and out of Egypt in 24 hours, which is a day longer than you'd care to spend there. The Suez Gulf isn't more than 10 miles across at its narrowest point, and Ballantyne, who was as full of gas and high spirits as a 20-year-old with an independent command can be, informed me that this was where the children of Israel had made their famous crossing in the Exodus. "But it's all balls and Bambury about the sea being parted and Pharaoh's army being drowned, you know. There are places where you can walk from Egypt to the Sinai at low tide, and an old gippo nigger told me it wasn't Pharaoh who was chasing him either, but a lot of rascally Bedouin Arabs, and after Moses had got over at low water, the tide came in and the Buddhos were drowned, and serve them right. And there wasn't a blessed chariot to be seen when the tide went out, so there." His boatswain said, begging his pardon, sir, but that was blasphemy, and they fell to arguing while the tars grinned and chafed and my bootneck sergeant scowled disapproval. He wasn't used to the free-and-easy style of these Navy youngsters, who couldn't help bringing their fifth-form ways to sea, and treated their men more like a football team of which they were captain than a crew. It was natural enough. The young cornet, or ensign in the army, when he joined his regiment for the first time, entered a world of rigid formality and discipline. But here was this lad just out of his teens with a little floating kingdom.